Richard Skipper celebrates. Every show is a celebration. Each show, Richard delivers the artists you love, showcasing what makes them unique. Never gossipy. The antidote to a sometimes hectic world. Now, here's your host, Richard Skipper.
Happy Sunday, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Richard Skipper Celebrates. Before we talk about the subject of today's show, I want to dedicate today to my dad. Today would have been his 85th birthday. And I'm all about celebrating artists, people from all walks of life. And I'm very excited not only to celebrate the legacy today of Paul Lynde, who I am a huge, huge fan of. I also hear that there is a film in the works based on his life, which we will talk about our very special guest about today, Kathy Fitzgibbon Rudolph. She happened to know Paul Lynde on an intimate level. I've been very, very fortunate in my lifetime to be able to call a few major icons friend. Carol Channing was a dear friend of mine. I was lucky enough to stay at her home. I was able to see her without the makeup, without the wigs, without the lashes, and to see the real person behind all of that. And that's literally what our guest today, Kathy, had the opportunity of doing with Paul Lynde himself. Now, I want to begin by saying that I've said this before, I am a product of 1960s and 70s television. That's where I first became familiar with Paul Lynde. As I've gotten to be a little bit older and wiser, I get the jokes in a way that I never got as a kid. But as a kid, he was always very funny with a snarky comment or that funny laugh or grin. But before I bring on my guest today, I want to take you all back to the Paul Lynde that I got to know through 1960s and 70s television. Today, Paul Lynde, we celebrate you.
Hi, I'm Paul Lynde. Well, somebody had to be.
I've been dying to meet you.
Looks like you already did.
Doctor, you put him on the screen, and he'll have every woman in the country swooning. One picture will be bigger than Rock Hudson.
Now, Mother's busy. Go on out and play in the traffic.
Your daughter has set a new record. Parents are always the last to know.
Have you had your appendix or tonsils or gallbladder or spleen removed?
No, not since they were first put in.
Oh, my goodness.
I got you that time.
You did.
Royal Canadian Mounted Police. We always get our man.
Here we have a genuine Ming vase. Made in Japan.
I sold 5 pair of shoes and they all disintegrated.
I don't understand. I only deal with the most reputable bankrupt companies.
Well, I thought you told me you already spoke for.
Oh, I just say that to keep the girls from fighting over me.
They don't call me Love Bug for nothing.
I know a discotheque that's real snazzy. Well, they do just about anything there.
Where's your Christmas spirit?
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer's back on the sauce.
You better believe it, Buster.
Why, you must be...
The Canoga Twins.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Buzzy.
We're here to claim the Canoga Estate.
Daddy would have wanted it that way.
The estate is mine. I am the widow Canoga.
There she is, Buzzy.
You hussy.
Fortune hunter.
Barracuda.
Trollop, evil person.
No fair, you did 2 in a row.
I'm sorry.
Well, khaki dresser.
You're just pure evil.
Thank you.
I just read where a half man, half woman robbed the circus.
Did they call the police?
They didn't have to. He turned herself in.
Kids, I don't know what's wrong with these kids today. Kids who can understand anything they say. Kids, they are disobedient, disrespectful oafs. Noisy, crazy, sloppy, lazy, loafers. I'll roll this up in kids. I didn't know what puberty was, so I almost passed it. Go to a cemetery, that's where you ought to play. What's the matter with kids today? Who's responsible for this?
Cute Donnie Marie, real cute.
Hello, Kathy. How are you?
Hello, Richard. Good. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Were there any clips here that you've never seen before?
Oh, I've seen every one of them.
I can imagine.
Every
Well, Kathy, we are here today to celebrate the legacy of Paul Lynn. Today marks 38 years ago
mm-hmm.
that he passed away, which I cannot believe.
Mm-mm.
I also can't believe that he was only 55, because the legacy and the amount of work that he left behind is absolutely amazing. But before we get to him, I want to start with you. As I said at the top of my show, I always celebrate artists, and you truly are an artist because you've written this incredible book, which I love, love, love. Not only is it a biography of Paul Lynn, but it's also a memoir. It's your story. You knew him better than just about anyone, according to Peter Marshall in the introduction. What an amazing story. But before we get there, I want to ask you, because we are in the midst of a pandemic, and mm-hmm. I truly want to know how you and your family are doing with all of this.
We're all doing fine, thank goodness. Everybody gets to work from home, or we try to stay safe. And it's been a very different Christmas and New Year's, but mm-hmm. thank goodness everybody's doing well. Thank you for asking.
That's wonderful. And you may want to step back from the microphone just to air because sure. you're getting a little bit of an echo there. I want to begin. I'm going to share a photograph here. This is you as a teenager when you got the opportunity to meet your idol. Now, there are a few things that I want to ask you about yourself. I know that you were a huge fan of Paul Lynn, but this type of adoration or fandom that you had towards him, because you did start out as a fan before you became a friend.
Absolutely.
Did you have that same feel for other celebrities?
Not as big as Paul. I had Donny Osmond photos up in my room, Chad Everett, no one touched my heart like Paul Lynn. I thought he was the most unique, side-splitting laughter, even though some of the jokes went over my head at that time, some of them. I was pretty sharp on those. But I just thought he was so unique and funny, and I thought he was a very good-looking man. And watching him on the shows made me laugh more than anybody. And I just said, I have to meet him. You know, as a teenager, you know, I'm betting my high school teachers, I'm going to meet Paul Lynn before I graduate high school. And of course, everybody's like, yeah, right. And then, as you know, it happened.
I know what happened. Now, I want to take you back to the 17-year-old, Kathy. Tell us a little bit about the type of girl you were. And then I want you to share the story, as your book opens with, of how you got to meet your idol.
17, I was in high school, loved high school, have a group of 7-8 friends. We are still all very close today. We are still the best of friends, which is amazing. And they would egg me on to do Paul Lynn imitations. And I really didn't do them well. But, you know, we would do them all the time. And then I wrote to Paul, and he didn't know me. And I just wrote him, your biggest fan. I'm sure he got that from millions. And he did write me back the first time, because I made a poem for him. And he wrote, thank you for the lovely poem. I said, oh my gosh, he read it. Now time goes on, And I do research every weekend. I had a whole group of friends, Robin, Jean, Olive, Barbara, Pam, Jocelyn. We all would go to the library together, something to do on a Saturday. We'd walk there in Levittown, Long Island. And I was doing research, as I always did, on Paul Lynn. I'd just find anything about him, magazines, anything. I had a scrapbook. And I came across a book of Broadway stars. It was a reference book. I couldn't take it out of the library. And I'm reading it, and it said Paul Lynn's business manager's phone number. So I, a nickel it was, and you made a copy, and I brought it home, and I said to my parents, I want to call this number. And I said, Kathy, it's his manager. First of all, it's probably the wrong number. You're never going to get him on the phone, but you want to do it, make it, here we go with my age, person to person, because it was very expensive to call California back then. I'm in New York, and he's in California. So I dial the number, and Paulin himself answers the phone. Can't believe a fan has found his home number. Mm-hmm. And, oh, my gosh, I blew him out of the water. He's like, who are you, and how'd you get my number? And I said, it's in a library book. And he couldn't believe it, but I knew so much about him. He didn't hang up on me. Very interesting that he never hung up. He listened. He was very polite, but he was a little suspicious. And he said, you found my phone number in a book. You know, I don't know you. And I said, will you go to the senior prom with me? I just blurted that out. And he said,
and of course, he said that if he went with you, he would have to do this for all of his fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. He's like, no way. And when he said no way in his voice, he started laughing. And then I asked him about his dog, Harry. That was the only significant. I mean, he had relatives and family, but his dog was his heart. And I knew we start talking about his dog. Then we're talking about him being on Donny and Marie Osmond. And the conversation's flowing. And then I ask him again, can I meet you? And he says, no, I'd have to do that for everybody, as you read in my book. Mm-hmm. And it took a few more tries. And I said, I know you come to New York. I mean, I read everything about him. He comes to New York every holiday. He said, I'm coming Thanksgiving. I said, good, so you can meet me. He's like, no, I can't. Long story short, I think I wore him down. He said, okay, I'll meet you. You got, oh, he didn't say I'll meet you until I said I'll have my father take
me. Now, before we go to that, I want to ask you, if you can just put our audience in perspective as to where he was at this point in his career. Of course, he was a household name because of Hollywood Squares, and he was making frequent appearances on the Donny and Marie show. So get the audience a real sense of where he was in his career at this point.
He was at the top of his game. It was 1975, November. He was a big star, television star, icon, basically. He was on every sitcom, you name it. As you showed some of the clips, you got Bewitched, you got I Dream of Jeannie, The Munsters, Mother-in-Laws. You know, you could go on and on. There's a big list. He also was doing a couple of films. He was huge from Bye Bye Birdie, the Broadway play originally, back in the 60s, and then they revised it with some of the same characters, but Dick Van Dyke and Paul were in it, and Paul hated the film. He just thought they took away a lot of his lines, and he had to sing Kids with somebody else, where on Broadway he had his own. But he was big. Every day his phone was ringing for him to be on some show, and he probably said yes to all of them. Paul was a really yes man. I'll do it. I'll do it. And he was huge. Very, very successful and very famous at that point. He had won the America's Best Comedian and about three other. He had a couple of Emmys from Hollywood Squares. He was big. So here I am, you know, on the phone, coaxing him to meet me. And he finally said, when I said my father would take me, he said, okay, I'll meet you. I'll be at the Pierre Hotel. I'm going to call you.
Before we go there,
since
you bring up his film career, I want to show a few highlights of his film career. And then we'll come back and we will go to the next step with what happened.
Sure.
Heads!
I didn't catch your name, boy.
I didn't throw it.
I beg your pardon.
One summer I worked with a circus. Oh, those midgets. Wild.
Those Rutland boys are like a bunch of hungry tigers.
I'm very partial to satin.
Oh?
I was married in satin.
Oh.
That is my first marriage.
You marvelous creature, you. Lay back and tell me all about yourself.
and take it real slow.
What are you doing?
Nothing, honey.
Come on, we're going home.
Yeah, I'm coming. There's definitely a language barrier here.
Piss on the light, man.
You've got yourself a deal.
My horoscope said I should put my best foot forward.
Foot right. Only the foot.
Oh, perfect. You'll hear from us. Next.
I got one out. The ball is still going up. Up. Out of the stadium. I think it's going into orbit.
You dare defy your mother?
It's my hair.
Not till you're 21.
Ed, I love you.
As you can see, we suggest the entire family all go out and select the final resting place together. The kids love it. They have a ball.
You really enjoy your work, don't you?
Sure do. I wouldn't want to do anything else. I like people.
Oh, shit. Nurse Tan, call maintenance. I have sperm all over my desk again.
Do you want an Indian wrestle?
Oh, perfect. I'll save the next dance for you. Where you been living, in a cave?
I hope you're satisfied.
That was great. Really nice highlights.
Thank
there.
You. Well, I want to thank Charles Pennington, who puts these together for me. So he agreed. He's staying at his hotel of choice whenever he was in New York. That was the Pierre. Yep. He agreed to meet you. And because of your age, your father went with you. What was your parents' thoughts about the fact that you were going to be meeting this very famous man? And again, you think you're going to be meeting him, and you were, as mm-hmm. a man.
Yes. And he said, 5 minutes, that's it. And I was grateful for that, and I was going to respect that. So my dad takes me to the pier. We take a train in, and I'm a mess. I'm nervous, and I can't believe I'm going to meet him. And this is my dream come true. And my parents were all, they love Paulin every, I think it was two nights a week, and during the day, Paulin was in Hollywood Square. So it was a family thing at night that we all watched. And I used to come home at lunchtime during high school because my class broke just in between Hollywood Squares. And I would run home because I lived right by the high school and watch the show and then run back to school. So they saw how much I was infatuated at that time and really loved Paulin. And they did too. I mean, who couldn't? At least I thought everybody thought he was great. So to meet him was beyond my dreams, but we got to the city. We're going to the Pierre Hotel. He had arranged for, I think it was a 3 or 3:30 meeting. So we got there a few minutes early, and my dad and I are waiting in the lobby. As we walk into the Pierre through these revolving doors, the hotel's on fire.
Yes.
I could not believe it. I said, oh, my dad's like, we got to get out of here. You know, there's firemen, there's smoke. I said, I'm not leaving. I don't care if the building falls down. I got to meet Paulin. And now they're not letting anybody up from the, now Paul had a suite. Mm-hmm. They're not letting anybody up or down. I think the fire was on the 15th or 16th floor. Now I'm devastated. But thank goodness for timing. Paul had a chiropractor appointment. He was just a few minutes late, and he came in through the revolving doors. I watched him. I was like, oh my gosh. I left my dad, ran over. I had a rose for Paul. And I said, hello, Mr. Lind. I'm Kathy Fitzgibbon. And he said, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm late. I wanted to shower first before I met you. He was so down to earth when he, you know, very, very sweet. And he said, come here, you know, read my messages. He had a bunch of messages. I'm reading them. I don't even know who they were from at the time. I was so nervous. And he says, well, where's your father? And I said, you know, he's in the lobby. He said, come on over. So my dad, I introduced Jerry Fitzgibbon, my dad, to him. And Paul says, let's go get a drink in the pier downstairs. Mm-hmm. And we walk in, and Paul's wearing a turtleneck and he had a navy jacket on, and my dad is wearing a sports jacket and a shirt. And the maitre there says, you can't come in and have a drink. Now, Paul's paying, at that time, I think it was $6.50 or $7.50 a night.
$6.75 a night.
According there you go, to, at yeah. night, every year. And he goes there Thanksgiving, goes there Christmas. And they're telling Paul, you can't come in without a tie.
Different and my dad times. Tie different either. Times.
Oh, and Paul says, how do I get a tie when my room's on fire? You know,
I can hear him saying it now. How?
Oh, he was livid. He looked at us. He said, Kathy, Jerry, let's go to the Sherry Netherlands, get a drink there. So now we're walking down the streets of the city with Paul. I'm in my glory. You know, 5 minutes has already gone by. We're already still going. And we got to the Sherry Netherlands, and he took the rose I gave him, and he asked the waiter for a vase. How touching. My father always remembers that. My father's 90 years old, and we still do a lot of stuff together about Paul. So he's very, very part of this story.
Right. Beautiful. Wow. Yeah. I want to read a comment that I've got here. This is from Christopher Reardon. And he says, I worked with Paul in the film The Glass Bottom Boat. Admittedly, I had been warned of all sorts of possible problems that might occur. Mm-hmm. In actuality, I found Mr. Lynn to be the most professional in every way. There was not a single problem with the man. He was a gentleman in every respect. He kept the entire cast in stitches between every take, and it turned out to be the most delightful experience. So, Christopher, thank you
Wonderful. For sharing this with us. Wonderful. Yes, that's good to know. And Paul could be difficult. He was a professional. But at times, but if he liked everything going well, it went well. And he usually knew everybody's lines better than anybody else. He was a true consummate professional.
Now, I love the fact that when you sat down and he first of all asked you what you wanted to do with your life, and you told him that you wanted to be a writer. Mm-hmm. And then he turned to your father and said, what does she really want from me?
Yep. And my dad said nothing. She's just a devoted fan. And then you saw Paul relax because he doesn't know you're after something. You want to find out something. I mean, Paul's it's very hard, as you know, in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Do people want you? And are they there for you? Are they there because you're famous? Are they trying to get something out of you? Or you got money? You don't know. So that put him at ease. And that meeting went on for over 2 hours.
Paul, the 5 minutes that he had allotted for you went on for 2 hours.
In
the evening, he said, I want to stay in touch.
He promised the photo, which was that Polaroid that you just showed. And mm-hmm. on the back, you know, he wrote to Kathy, our afternoon at the Sherry. And then he had another paper while we were waiting for the picture to develop. Boy, the ages that we are here, right? And,
I know.
As it was developing, he hands me another paper and he says, I have guests coming up. I have to go. And that's the only reason. I think if he didn't have guests, we would have still sat there. But we talked mm-hmm. about everything and it was a really nice. We just, as my dad says, it was like two old friends talking. We just clicked. And then he hands me a paper and I said, what is this? And he says, that's my home address. I want you to come see me in California. Well, talk about your dream just going more and more and more. And of course, I ended up going to his house in California and had many good times with him. That was a very special day. It was November 24th, 1975 that we met. And we were friends till he passed away, unfortunately.
Now, I know that you talk in the book about going out to see him and everything. And the way that he interacted with you, I mean, the thing that I take away are these kisses that you both shared. Knowing the history that I know about who he was and what he was all about at that time, were you at all naive about his sexuality or you were completely in the dark?
I didn't know. I mean, I had a lot of friends that we hung out, Bill Keel, Frank Avino, there's a whole bunch of friends, Margo, and everybody would be like, you know, he might be gay. And I said, no way. Of course, I didn't want him to be gay. I liked him. I didn't mm-hmm. care later on. But right then and there, that was not true to me.
Do you feel that you had, you know, really romantic feelings towards him? That you, I know you tell the story about you and another friend, a male friend of his, going to a dance club and how you were feeling jealous from this other guy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, actually, the disco we went to, I was in Virginia. I went to see Paul in a show. He was so happy. You can't tell Paul you're coming. That's how Paul was. If you told him, he'll freak out. He had very severe stage fright. Mm-hmm. And if you're coming, don't tell him. He doesn't want to know what night, because usually he did a show several nights. Don't mm-hmm. tell him you're coming. So I surprised him. And he was so happy. You know, Mike, he used to call me Mike Happy with a C. Because, you know, when people wrote my name, it was at a K. He'd go crazy. No, Mike Happy is a C. And he was so happy to see me. And we had a great night. And then he said, let's go out. It was my birthday. And he said, we're going to go out dancing. We were with Elizabeth Allen, my girlfriend Barbara, and myself. And we went to this club. And we walk in. And, you know, I want to reverse a little bit because mm-hmm. I'm gonna make sense of it all. 4th of July, 1976. My dad bought us all, my friends, my family, Patty Cahay and everybody at that time, tickets to see Paul. And he was coming to Westbury, Long Island.
The music fair.
Exactly. And Paul had called me the day before. We met. We hung out at the pool, had a great day. And he said, I'll see you backstage. He always had me come over. And anyway, the show went on. It was a great show. And after the show, Paul always stayed to sign autographs. And I've been with him at least 2 hours. He was very patient. He would sit with everybody until the last person got their autograph. Very, very funny to people. Good time. So I was there with him this particular night. When it was last to go, now Paul starts drinking pretty heavily during the show. Oh, and not during the show, after the show in the dressing room. Mm-hmm. So as we come out, he has his drink and he's drinking and drinking and he's funnier and funnier. And then he's pretty out there with the drinks. And my parents are hanging out in the back and I'm still with Paul because he wanted me to be with him the whole time. And it was the end of the night. We were leaving and he was going back to California and I'm going home. And that's when we were saying goodbye. And he kissed me on the mouth long. And I didn't expect that. It was wonderful. He was singing I Love You, the Paul McCartney song, Silly Little Love Songs to me. Oh, my gosh. Now my dream is just getting bigger and bigger. And, you know, he has affection for me, too, which is great.
Did you have these dreams of being Mrs. Lind?
Oh, at 17. Yeah. I have cards from my friends I saved that said, Dear Kathy, I know you're going to marry Paul. You'll have great children together. I mean, we were just in a fantasy world. So after that kiss, I thought for sure he had special feelings for me as I did. Meanwhile, my mother's screaming in the background to my dad, Jerry, get him off her. She didn't want this older man kissing me. And my dad was cool with it. He said, let her have her moment. You know, anyway, so now we'll
go. Your father know?
Pardon?
Did your father know?
He said he wasn't sure.
Okay.
But when we went to the pier another time, there was a gentleman there. My father didn't tell me this until years later. Mm-hmm. He said, as soon as I saw that other guy there, I knew that was his friend Pablo. But I still didn't know because I walked in to see Paul in the suite and he's hugging and kissing me like so happy to see me. Very affectionate. I think he just really appreciated that I cared and I didn't want anything from him. I think that's what may have been the trigger for us to have a lot of chemistry together. We also got along well. So
now you also mentioned in the book at this time when you were getting to know each other that he was doing a benefit for a children's organization.
Yes.
And this was right at the height of the Anita Bryant situation. And a reporter actually asked him what his thoughts were on Anita Bryant. And then you can run with this story.
Sure. Well, we were at a kid's benefit and the reporter at first said to Paul, can I interview you about the benefit? And Paul said, sure. He started out with questions about the children and Paul was like, you know, I'm here, we're celebrating and we're doing this for the children. But then he switched it. Now, at that time, I'm so naive. All I knew was Anita Bryant did orange juice commercials and she was a singer. That's all I knew. I had no idea she was running a campaign against gay people. So once the reporter said to Paul, what do you think about Anita Bryant? Paul grabbed me and said, Kathy, let's get out of here. And we ran. We were at an LA place in a field and we ran and there was Angie Dickinson, and a lot of people there. And Paul was so upset. He's like, let's get out of here. And I later said to him, because I was confused. I said, what does Anita Bryant have to do with you? And he said, she attacked my people. Well, the red
flag. That sentence jumped out at me like a brick falling on my head,
wow.
Because I am thinking, you know, at this, it was a different time, obviously, that he would be that open about who he was. I know you were a, forgive me, a child at this point. And I would say, I would think probably a sheltered child. He had not had any exposure to this, but was he open with other people about who he was as regarding his sexuality?
I think Hollywood, because I spoke to Les Roberts, who used to write the jokes for mm-hmm. Paul, and he had a lot of the gay undertone, mm-hmm. you know. Les said to me, Hollywood, we knew it, but the public didn't. If the public knew, could lose his career. Hollywood at that time kept secrets. You had your private life. Mm-hmm. People didn't do what they do these days and just try to, you know, get into your personal life and maybe make things terrible for you. But at that time, there was a respect, I think, for the journalist. So I was naive. And now I'm getting a little bit older. Now I'm, you know, when I'm in California, I think I was guessing 21 maybe. And that's, around 20s. I can't remember the exact age. But when I went to that disco with Paul, you know, he walked in with me arm in arm. He always made me feel like the star. And we'd walk in and I saw all these men. My girlfriend's with me. We're looking at each other like, okay, this is a little different. I've never been to a gay club. The Nutcracker, I think it was called. Great name. And we were dancing, you know, all night, just me and Paul, and slow dancing. And I'm on cloud nine. A few men came over. They tried to cut in. Now, I don't know if they're cutting in for me or Paul, but Paul would be like,
I'd like to think both.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we have a waiter who is treating Paul like king. If I wanted to drink Paul, Elizabeth Allen, my girlfriend Barbara, in 2 seconds. I mean, Paul was king there. And it's the end of the night, and they did the Donna Summer's last dance, and Paul and I are dancing cheek to cheek. Now, it's my birthday this night, and I think I was 19 that night. Okay, just came back to me. And I'm thinking, Paul likes to go out. I know he's a big party. I wonder where we're going to go after hours. And I'm in my glory. It's probably about, 2 o'clock in the morning. They're closing it, or 1 o'clock, whenever they close the bars back then. And we're getting ready to leave. And I look at Paul, and he looks at me and he says, okay, Kathy, I'll see you tomorrow. And I thought, what? And he walked out with our waiter. That was it. Then I knew for sure that.
So, did that moment change the dynamics of your relationship?
I was angry. I was a little angry, a little hurt. And I went home. I stayed at a hotel that night with my girlfriend. And I was just sulking over it. I was very upset. I just was confused. And the next day, Paul had a show. I was meeting him again backstage. And now, the audacity of me, I think of it back now. I'm walking around with my nose in the air in front of Paul. He knows I'm pissed. I know. He knows. And he's joking with everybody. We're in a room with all the cast and we're hanging out. And in the middle of it, he says, you know, last night, the waiter stole my watch. And I know my Kathy would have never done that.
Mm-hmm.
Hit my heart. That's all he had to say. We're back to being the best of friends. I accepted who he was. I got it. But he still liked me and I still liked him. And I was okay.
Now, I want to give everyone a little bit of Paul's history. But before we go there, I want to ask you, the details that you cover in this book are so amazing. Did you keep journals? Did you keep a diary?
Yeah.
So all of that, all during this time, you were keeping this track. Did you ever think, I know that you told Paul the first time you met him that you wanted to be a writer. Were you thinking that someday you would write a book about him?
Never thought it would be about Paul Lynn. Always wanted to write. When I was in high school, my teachers wrote in my yearbook, we know we'll see published one day. I wrote stories. They would read them. They found them very good. And never. I knew I had a great story with me and Paul, but I didn't know if it could be a book. And then I found Paul's relatives, and I talked to them about it. And they were the very first ones, and I think to this day, maybe the only ones who ever gave an interview about Paul and his life. And that started it. And then the next thing you know, I have Kay Ballard giving me an interview. Peter Marshall, wonderful man, who also gave me a forward to the book.
Yes.
Then you know, Cloris Leachman. Then I have Paul's friend Jan Formstrom. It just rolled and rolled and rolled. So I made it my story with Paul on a personal level, how I saw Paul, how we had our times together, and then his life story from when he was a little boy growing up in a prison and his dad was a sheriff and, you know, his whole life story, his career, and it ended up.
But let me ask you, I mean, there have been other books that have been written about Paul Lynn, and, you know, some of them may be factual, some of them may not be factual. And you knew him personally. You knew him on a personal basis. What is the biggest misconception that people have about Paul Lynn now?
Misconception. Some people say he died of AIDS. He did not die of AIDS. That's, I get that all the time. Some people tell me he wasn't gay, and they can't believe he was gay to this day. And I say, well, yes, he was. So that is true. He was gay. A lot of people knew that. Some didn't. Mm-hmm. And he has a reputation. When Paul drank too much, it depends on his mood and who he's with. I never got his backlash or anything, but he could be very vicious. He was kind of bitter about, I guess, being stuck on a game show forever, almost 15
years. Well, let's go back for just a moment, because there is a very specific story that I want to touch upon a little later that was soul-crushing towards the end of his life, and that was with Northwestern University, and you know which story I'm talking about. When he really had aspirations to be a serious actor, and he did serious theater. He was in Streetcar Named Desire. He did other things. But the onstage persona that we came to know, both from television, Hollywood Squares, and film, that came as a result of his stand-up comedy routine. From the people that you've interviewed and talked about, did they talk about that serious side of Paul Lynn wanting to be the serious actor before he realized that comedy was his forte?
Yeah, Kay Ballard was interesting because Paul was on, I think it was Cable Roberts, I think that was the name of the show, and he did a serious role very early in the 60s. And he was telling Kay, who told me, that he loved the serious. He played a villain. He played a murderer, kills his brother, and he loved it. And Kay said to him, Paul, what are you doing? You're known for your funny voice. You're known for your comedy. Don't change it. This is who you are. And Paul didn't really want to hear that. He still wanted it. And through his whole career, he did 11 movies. And he always said, I don't know why he always said it, but he goes, oh, there are 11 bad movies. They were not all, they were some Glass Bottom Boat, Bye Bye Bird. I think they're great classics.
I laugh out loud at these clips. I still love them too. Yes.
He was just, I guess, humble about it, or just, he said he wanted to go off television. He felt he had too much exposure. The man was on, I don't know, 200 hours a year or a week. I don't even remember, but all the time. He was on everything, as you know, back in the 60s, late 60s and all through the 70s. So he ended up quitting Hollywood Squares because his reason was, he felt if he was, remember back then, if you were a TV star, you can't really be a movie star. It didn't work like that. Now it does, but back then, not. So he figured if he lays low, maybe a producer will call him to do a serious role. That was what he wanted. And that was, as Kay said to me, you know, that was his heartbreak that he didn't get to do that. But I look at him as, I wish he was here today to see people still love him.
Oh, absolutely. No, he's originally from Mount Vernon, Ohio. Mm-hmm. He is one of six children.
Yep.
And then he went to Northwestern University. We're going to jump ahead because I want people to read the book. Okay. And there's so much to cover. He went to Northwestern University, and there, Charlotte Ray, Cloris Leachman. I mean, this whole new world was beginning to happen for him. But for him, there was always a dichotomy going on. There was the serious person who wanted to be taken as a serious actor. Mm-hmm. But the other flip side of that was wanting to be the life of the party. Mm-hmm. And it was the after parties that he really relished at and began to find his own voice at that time.
And it's still didn't make him feel good at, you know, at the end of his career, that no one was taking him seriously. I think he would have, should have maybe embraced it more. Look at us. We side splitting laughter, the jokes. I never heard, and Chita Rivera, when she did the play, she said she never heard more laughter than when Paul was on stage. He mm-hmm. really, he walked in a room, he stole any show, anything he was on.
Now, I want to let everyone, this may be something that may surprise a lot of people. I knew this. He suffered with terrible weight problems as a child. It was difficult for his parents to find clothing for him because he was incredibly overweight at the time. He was still overweight when he went to New York to pursue a career as an actor. And if you can talk a little bit about the lean years, you go into detail in the book with some of the odd jobs that he had to survive.
Oh, he drove an ambulance. He worked in a retail store. He worked as a waiter, which he said was his favorite job in the world. And he still to this, at that time, loved to still serve mm-hmm. people and cook for them. It got so bad. Now, Paul was 260 pounds when he went to Northwestern, and doing Shakespeare there and doing serious roles with his nasally voice, he couldn't, I don't know if he could help himself or he came off as funny. So there was the seriousness gone. But as time went on, he started to lose weight. He lost over 100 pounds. Bye Bye Birdie, the Broadway show. I have a picture in my book, which Sony let me use for the book. Mm-hmm. Paul is as slim, I think gorgeous, you know, mm-hmm. really, really slim. He went up and down for the rest of his life. He went on Weight Watchers, which he was on the cover of Weight Watchers with a personal trainer. And he kept his weight off probably from, I would say through the 70s. He never went over 200 pounds ever. That was his goal. And he was down to 155 at one point, up, down. And at one point he was so desperate, he had to sell his blood just to get $5. I think they mm-hmm. gave $5 for a pint of blood back then. And then he would go online again and again until, you know, they tell you, you can't keep giving blood. And he had it very, very rough. New York, living in a commune house with Marlon Brando, Wally Cox.
I mean, there's one story that you tell in the book, and I'm going to let you tell the punchline of this story. Not that it's a punchline, but he had an eating disorder. We would now call it an eating disorder. And there was a communal kitchen at the end of the hall that these actors shared. And one night he opens the refrigerator door and there's a note for him.
Yeah, because it said, Paulin, you want to keep taking food? Take anyone you want. It has poison in it. So
one
bad.
Thing has poison in it.
Yeah. So, you know, Paul said, you know, he said, and he admitted it. He said, we had no money. There's, you know, you're hungry. And he liked to eat. So he would go and steal. He said, I think we all stole food from each other. That's what he said back then. We're starving actors, literally. That's so bad. That story.
As it happens, you know, this group of actors that he gets to know at Northwestern, they're all coming to New York and they're all beginning to become famous. It's not happening for him. No. So he hears about a talent contest, and that really opened the door for him, if you can take us there.
Yes, I think it was on First Avenue. It was in New York City. There was a bar, had a sign up, you know.
On Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, pretty big prize money and in those days. So Paul ran home and he wrote the African monologue, which is so dark humor and so strange.
But funny. And
very funny. Nowadays, people get it. And one of the, I forget who it was, oh my gosh, the actor, it was Jack Benny, said to Paul, you're ahead of your time. One day when you walk on stage, people will be laughing before you speak, but you have to give it time. Your humor's way beyond. It was very dark humor, very crazy. You know, he writes a poem to his friend that's dying and he says, cheer up, you know, you only have one day left, or, you know, just so bad, but funny. And people liked the African monologue, which was about him and a he wrote him at Carl Kanker, and that he and his wife went on this trip and they got thrown over a waterfall and a lion ate his wife. And it was so funny. It got noticed for the New Faces of 52. And he was very excited to see that he was picked at that time as one of the outstanding acts. So there he thought it was going to be, you know,
And every paper is raving about him. Yep. So the first time he's getting his name in the paper. Well, we all did come to know him. And I know we're jumping around a lot, but there's a lot of territory here. Again, it's all in the book and it's available on Amazon. Thank I'm going to show another compilation. And these are some of my favorite zingers from Hollywood Squares. I hope you enjoy it. And then when we come back on the other end, I want to talk about the last part of his life. So enjoy these clips from Hollywood Squares.
Paul Lynde, all in the Hollywood Square.
Paul Lynde.
Liz Taylor had 1,000 little diamonds and 25 large ones decorating a part of her body. Which part?
Her chin.
Sonny Bono. Sonny Bono sadly admitted recently that although he's been looking, he'll never find another... Another what?
Job.
According to the famous story, who did Narcissus eventually fall in love with?
Well, for a while he was married to Carol Lawrence.
Was Snow White a blonde or a brunette? Snow White, was she a blonde or a brunette?
Only Walt Disney knew for sure.
According to French chef Julia Child, how much is a pinch?
It's just enough to turn her on.
Do we know, Paul, do we know of anyone who ate over 1,200 baked beans in a half hour?
That may explain what happened to Amelia Earhart.
True or false, research indicates that Christopher Columbus liked to wear bloomers and long stockings.
Well, it's not easy to sign a crew up for 6 months.
True or false? There is a new birth control dog food on the market.
Yes, it's good for girls on a budget.
And he has a new book out, Liberace has, called The Things I...
Oh, put in my hair.
When is it a good idea to put your pantyhose in the microwave oven for about 2 minutes?
House is surrounded by the police.
True or false? Anne Margaret reached 30 this year.
Just when she inhales.
What should you call the group of dancers in a ballet?
Silly savages.
Does Raquel Welch like milkshakes?
She doesn't have much choice, does she?
What's the main thing we get from Honduras?
You got it, too.
From what animal do you get your silk blouses? From what animal do you get your silk blouses?
An animal to you, Peter, but kind and generous to me.
In what state was Abraham Lincoln born?
In what state?
Mm-hmm.
Like all of us, naked and screaming.
President Nixon recently told Time magazine that he doesn't have something in the bedrooms of any of the places he lives. What doesn't he have in the bedroom?
Fun.
According to the Constitution, Paul, what's the proper term for our form of government?
At the moment... Shaky. Or will you accept?
I love him.
Oh, those are great.
So many really fun things. And again, you know, Chuck, thank you so much, Chuck Pennington, for putting this together. I want to ask you, because what was his persona like off camera when it was just the two of you sitting? How open was he about his life as time went on with the two of you?
Paul was very shy a lot. My friends had met him at his house with me and on another occasion, and they just couldn't believe how quiet and shy he was. So he had the shy side. And he also had a hysterically funny. He could be just as funny as you see him on Squares as when we went out. I had the best times with him. He also, you know, I saw him after his dog, Harry, died after 15 years. And he was very sad. And he had a lot of complaints about the industry. He complained a lot about, you know, why he wasn't getting better parts. And, you know, I guess it's politics or whatever goes on back there. Mm-hmm. And I found him to be very open. I found him to be so honest. If you ask Paul something, it was straight from his heart. He just spoke whatever he felt. I thought that was very interesting. He didn't hide things. Very open to me about his private life, which I thought was, I'm still floored to this day that he let me into that very,
Kathy, he began to, unfortunately, alienate a lot of his very close friends, Kay Ballard being one of them. Mm. Where was that coming from for him, from your own perspective, in terms of that side of him, which was not the side that a lot of people from his earlier part of his life knew about or were aware of?
I think it was frustration that he wasn't getting taken serious. He had a bitter side. I mean, when he drank and he was, maybe he got turned down for something or he wanted something or somebody got more money than him or whatever, and he was drinking and it wasn't in a good state, he really would lash out viciously at his friends. He did it with Kay over and over. She used to forgive him. In the end, unfortunately, she said she had enough. She was done mm-hmm. with him. Some other friends were like that too. And then other people like Cloris Leachman understood him and was just understood him and still stayed with him. But, you know, and Jan Forbes, always his friend from college, also understood him. And
now I want to go to one episode that happened in his life that I referred to earlier. And this was Northwestern University when they were doing a celebration of their alumni. Yes. And he was purposely left off the list. Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about the circumstances around that and really where that put him as far as his psyche was concerned?
Well, Northwestern, he loved being part of it. He was very proud of it as an alumni. They always had a parade and he was going to be the marshal and he was thrilled with that. And he loved the town and seeing everybody. But he went to Burger King after many, many drinks, got drunk and was being a little bit prejudiced to someone standing in line who ended up being the professor at Northwestern. Paul didn't know this. Mm-hmm. And the professor wrote a letter, I believe, the next day for the school paper. I had a couple of copies of it.
He hit all the papers. I remember this.
Yeah, and that was big. And they wanted Paul to apologize. He did apologize, but I don't think they felt it was that sincere. And he said, look, I was drinking. Paul just knew. He always said, I'm not a good drunk. He always said, I'm not good. I can get really nasty. And then when they were picking the big show on television, all alumni, Tony Randall, all the people he worked with too, Paul couldn't believe they left him off. He thought it was a mistake, and it wasn't. That crushed him. That crushed him. He should have been there, he thought.
Did he ever talk to you about all this?
He's mentioned little things in between, like Anita O'Brien, he explained, because I didn't understand that and the way he just did it. But, you know, he would tell me, you know, he's just frustrated with things. You could see it. And then sometimes we would just go out and laugh and have a good time and not think about anything.
Can you imagine him in his world and being able to be more open and free with who he was?
Oh, my goodness. He would love it now. He would love it. He'd be on a reality show. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be great. He'd love to cook. I wish he was too young. He left this world way too young.
When was the last time that you two spoke?
About 2 weeks before he passed away. We had a nice conversation on the phone. He was looking for a brownstone in New York. And I was so excited because now he was going to be in New York more. And that's a lot closer than California. Mm-hmm. And he was just, I think he just did a commercial. He was going to do another commercial. I want to say for Dino, but I don't remember now, which never came to because he had passed away. But that's where he was in his life. He was thinking of opening a restaurant in Manhattan. He was going to call it East Lind. His father's marketplace was Lind's meat market. And he said he'd come there and he could have dinner if he felt like coming in and talking to, which he loved talking to his fans. And he said he could do that. And that was his next step in life and still keep his house in California because he wanted to still make movies. He never gave up on that.
And where were you when you heard that he had passed away?
Oh, gosh. I was working in my office. My girlfriend, Robin, called me up. It was probably around 8:30 a.m. New York time. And I was sitting at my desk and my phone rang. And it was my friend, Robin. She said, Kathy, I just heard on the radio that Paul Lynn died. I said, that's not true. And I hung up. I could not believe it. A few minutes later, the phone rang again. It was my mother. And as soon as I heard her voice, I knew it was true. That was devastating. So I hung up, still didn't want to believe it. And I called Paul's house. Now, there's a 3-hour difference. So I'm like, afraid I'm going to wake him up at 6:30 in the morning or whatever time it was then. And then half afraid that he wasn't going to answer. And I just got his answering service. They had answering services back then. And the woman just said to me, we don't have any information. And then, of course, a few hours later, it was all over the news. And that was that.
Yeah. Well, Kathy, first of all, thank you. Thank you for joining me today. Thank you for being that 17-year-old child wanting to meet her idol because it's given us a wonderful insight into his life. I do have one question that I want to ask you before we do end. You call the book His Life, His Loves, and His Laughter. Loves, and I think I know the answer to this, the S on loves is in parentheses. Why?
Well, he always signed his autographs, Love and Laughter. So I wanted that in the title. Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend Barbara said to me, Kathy, look at his life and look what you know. You should throw an S. She told me this and put the parentheses around it. And that's how that came about. I said, you know what? Let people read about his loves, whether it was his love for his dog or his love for his career or his love, maybe love for me too, whatever it is. I wanted people to see he had a good heart and I loved him very much. And a lot of people did. And he's missed to this day, of course. But what a way to celebrate. Thank you, Richard, for doing this. You know,
well, I want to say, first of all, we are at the end of our show. Paul Lynn hated, and one thing that we do among many things that we share in common, but he hated for anyone to say goodbye to him.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he hated it. And I don't like to say goodbye either. I always say, till next time. And he would always say, we'll see each other again soon. But never goodbye. So I don't want to say goodbye to you, Kathy. I hope that you'll remain in touch. And if there's anything that I can ever do for you with anything coming up in the future, and I hope there are other books, because you are such a brilliant writer.
Oh, thank you. Very kind of you to say. Yes, thank you very much.
That there are other books in your future. I want to thank everybody for being here today. If you enjoyed the show, and I hope you did, and if you haven't done so already, please go to my website, richardskipper.com. Sign my guest book with your thoughts about the show. That helps to boost me in other markets. I also tell everyone to go out and do something nice for somebody else without expecting anything in return. So what I'd like you all to do today, I want you to go to your Facebook friends list, and the first name that pops up, I want you to do this. I want you to order 2 copies of this book. I want you to keep one for yourself because it's a great read, and I want you to send one to the first friend on your list because this book is truly it's true. Above all things, it's about friendship. And how important friendship is to all of us. So I hope that all of you will do that. Go out and do something nice for somebody else without expecting anything in return. That's what I'd like you to do. And before we end the show, Kathy, I want to give you the final word. Anything that you want to expound upon that we spoke about today? Anything that we didn't talk about that you wish we had? I mean, it's also tragic that he lost both of his parents. And his brother a few years earlier, but finding out about all of this all at the same time. His parents never lived to see his success. And you'll read about all of that in the book as well. Anything that we didn't talk about that you wish that we had, or just any message that you want to put out to everyone who's watching now. And again, thank you. This has been a delight for me. Thank you.
It's been great, Richard. Thank you for having me. Celebrating Paul Lynn's life. Today is the anniversary of his passing, so it's a bittersweet day, of course. But just remember Paul's love and laughter, and that's what he would want everybody to remember, because that's what he did in life. He made us love him because we laughed, and I thought he was very, very special, and I'm glad we're still celebrating him to this day. I think there's more to come with Paul. He's not going to be forgotten for a very, very long time, maybe forever.
Now, I have to ask you very quickly before we move on, and then, but there's a movie that's going to be made about it.
Yes, there is.
Have you been contacted?
Yes, I have. I've been contacted. We'll see what happens. We're not at that stage yet with the pandemic and everything's happening. Mm-hmm. We might be doing negotiations. I'm just going to sit back and see what time does, and hopefully it'll be something that will celebrate Paul, all of who he was, the good, the bad, and the funny, because we all have that. And I think this year we needed some good things to come out. This has been a tough year.
You come back when the movie comes out?
Sure, if you're happy, I'd be happy to be on. Are you kidding me?
I'd love to have you anytime. Thank you so much. And happy
Thank you for having me.
Goodbye.
Happy New Year. Be safe.
Thank you.